All right. Hello there, listeners. You are listening to More Than a Whelan. I'm your host, Sean M. Whelan, and today in the studio, I'm thrilled to have
Mickey Michelle
joining me.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to More Than a Whelan, a podcast about creative writing written by me, but most importantly, inspired by you.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to More Than a Whelan. We are coming at you from downtown sunny Collingwood in Castaway Studios in the greatest suburb in the world, which is Collingwood, and it is sunny as hell out there today and windy as hell. Before I introduce you to my special guest, I'm going to start off the show with a poem that ties into a couple of things we're going to discuss today. I'm just going to start reading it. You may recognize it. It's from a poet who probably earned a lot more money from his records in the end, actually. But this is called Dance Me to the End of Love. Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin. Dance me through the panic till I'm gathered safely in. Lift me like an olive branch and be my homeward dove. Dance me to the end of love. Oh, let me see your beauty when the witnesses are gone. Let me feel you moving like they do in Babylon. Show me slowly what I only know the limits of. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the wedding now. Dance me on and on. Dance me very tenderly and dance me very long. We're both of us beneath our love. We're both of us above. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the children who are asking to be born. Dance me through the curtains that our kisses have outworn. Raise a tent of shelter now, though every thread is torn. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin. Dance me through the panic till I'm gathered safely in. Touch me with your naked hand or touch me with your glove. Dance me to the end of love. And that was, of course, written by the one, the only, Leonard Cohen. And the reason I chose that poem to begin with was because our guest today is a dancer, or as she described herself to me, as a songstress stripper.
Songstress stripper. I thought you were just reciting that to just, you know, get in the mood or something, Sean. Come on.
All right, I got there eventually.
Yeah.
And who's just returned to Melbourne. Welcome back home, Mickey.
Well, thank you.
And has been living in Montreal over the last 5 years or so, yeah. Where Leonard Cohen lived until the end of his life, I believe.
Yeah.
Did you ever run into him in the streets?
I did not, but I know a few people who did.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was there, I've been there twice actually, and the last time I was there, someone did tell me the name of a cafe where he used to go very regularly and apparently was very open to having chats, but I never quite got around to getting there, unfortunately.
No, nor did I.
Yes. welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
So this is a first on many levels. This is a first podcast recording for you, I believe.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
And this is the first answer we've had on the show. When it first started, I was sort of really just speaking exclusively to writers, but I've decided to branch out and speak to creatives of all descriptions, all the people in the creative rainbow.
They're very clever.
Yes. We've had a street artist, we've had other things.
Other things, well, yeah. That's a broad reference.
And now we have a song. What was it again?
You're getting a stripping songstress.
Songstress. Amazing. You also started in music.
I did.
So tell me about this creative journey of yours.
Well, I've always been interested in the cabaret world for starters, but I did start off, I guess, as a singer-songwriter in the folksy Melbourne scene. because I guess, I don't know, I have a knack for writing and I just, that was my outlet at the time. But I always felt like, I don't know, there was more in me and there was more than just like the music and writing, and I just felt like I had to express myself in other areas. And so I kind of went from the whole singer-songwriter thing in Melbourne, and when I went to Montreal, I continued with that. But then I got into burlesque, and so that kind of just added a notch to my belt and kind of gave me the ultimate outlet for everything I'd been searching for. So
amazing.
Here we are.
that's quite a journey.
Yeah.
What first took you to Montreal?
Oh, I needed a change for starters. Mm. I just wanted to, spread my wings elsewhere and see how far I could get. And it's funny, I originally wanted to go to Berlin because I heard nothing but great things about Berlin. I still want to go to Berlin, but in the end I chose Montreal because at the time I really liked New York and America. And I thought, oh, Montreal's close to New York. I could just go there whenever I want. And I'd never been to Montreal, but I'd heard great things. So I just thought initially it was kind of like a trial and error thing. I just thought I'll try it out, and if I like it, I like it. If not, I'll see what else I could do. And I ended up loving it, and it worked really well for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I've never thought of it before, but Montreal and Berlin are kind of similar cities in a way, because they're both big creative hubs, mm-hmm. and they're both cold as fuck in winter.
Oh, my God. No, I've never – well, oh, Montreal, my God. I can't even – like right now in Montreal, it's like – minus 10 degrees and like 20 centimetres of snow. So I'm like, yeah, you can have that. But I don't know what the thing is with Berlin in winter.
I've been to Montreal twice, and the first time was in the depth of winter,
oh my God.
Like snow everywhere. And the second time was in the middle of summer.
Oh, wow.
And it was really bizarre because it was actually like two completely different cities. I went to the same locations I'd been in winter, and they just looked so different when they weren't covered in snow. It's amazing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's unreal.
But the first time I went to Montreal was for a writer's festival, and I'd never really experienced that sort of cold weather before. It was amazing as a visitor, but I feel like it'd be pretty intense living through it. Although, mind you, I think I've said this on the show before. I've been in like Ottawa where it was minus 26, but I've never been so cold as I am in Melbourne, because in Canada, everywhere inside is really well heated.
Yes.
Because it has to be, otherwise you will die.
Oh yeah, because they know how to do things in winter. It's very well put together for winter.
Totally.
But it's summer, it's that they don't have a clue. It's hot everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
But no,
yeah.
For winter, yeah, like you said, you have to, or else you die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here, it's not so cold that you'll die, but it's very uncomfortable. So you have a whole lot of places with terrible heating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
In winter in Montreal, you go inside and everyone's in a T-shirt and stuff. Like, yeah.
Yeah, they de-robe. They take off like 20 layers of clothing. And
yeah. But I like going outside in that brutal cold just to experience what that feels like. Like in Ottawa, it was minus 26. You could feel your clothes getting stiff. Stiff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And like your nose freezing.
Yeah, and your hair's just going.
Yeah. And so you didn't take up, did you not take up burlesque until you were in Montreal?
Yeah, correct.
Right.
I did not do burlesque until I got to Montreal, and I didn't even think I would do burlesque.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What first sparked that? Did you go to some shows?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I'll do a plug right now. The Wiggle Room in Montreal is the number one burlesque bar in Canada. I went there initially because a friend of mine worked there as a tech, and because he knew I liked cabaret and everything, so he suggested I come along. And so I went along to one of their shows. It was like a game show evening. It was
amazing.
Called the Weird Ass Game Show, where they had a whole lot of different performers, like burlesque and comedy and everything. But I just fell in love with the vibe and the atmosphere. And from there on after, I kind of started going to burlesque shows and meeting burlesque producers and just becoming friends with them and just being opened up to that whole world. And then, I don't know why. I don't know what made me take the plunge. I guess I eventually started working there for starters, so I had no choice but to be engulfed in that whole world anyway. But then I don't know, it was kind of that thing where, I need more in my life. I need an art form to just push me that bit further, and I felt like that would do it. And so I enrolled in the burlesque school in Montreal called Arabesque Burlesque. I one day I woke up and I'm like, it's do or die. I've got to do this. I've made my payment done. And then I'm like, oh my God, what have I done? Oh my God. But then I did their classes there, had the student showcase, and I just, from there on after, I just kept getting bookings for burlesque shows. So,
amazing.
Yeah.
Do you remember your first show in public?
Yes.
Were you nervous?
A bit at the start. I was a bit, but since it was a student showcase, they're kind of on your side from the beginning, the audience, right. And they're just always supportive. And so it was it's a great place to debut and act, and it was really fun, and I got good feedback. So
yeah. But then, what about your first proper show out in the real world? Did you already feel like well prepared for that from doing a course? I guess maybe.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, but it was. The first actual show I did in the real world was a bit different, but it was the same feeling because I guess in general the public is very open to burlesque and they want to see you do well and they want to encourage you. So I had that in my favour.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
What are some of your burlesque heroes in Berlin?
Montreal. A big hero of mine. She was one of my teachers, actually. Her name is Bon Bon Bombay.
Yeah.
She's been on all different shows around the world, like France has Got Talent. She was in Romania as well. I don't know what the name of it is called, but it's kind of like the equivalent of Romania's Got Talent.
Right.
Doing her burlesque acts. She's been to the Burlesque Hall of Fame. But we had, I don't know, she just vibes similar in a similar way to me in that kind of like a dark circus kind of thing. And she's just a very big inspiration to me for my performances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So burlesque was something that sort of has really had, well, I mean, the revival's been going for a while now, maybe 10 years, maybe more.
Yeah, yeah.
But before that, it was sort of nowhere for a long time, wasn't it?
It's true. It's like, I know, it's kind of, like you said, it's kind of just progressed and now it's just everywhere.
Yeah.
That was amazing. The same in Montreal, I think, yeah.
Did you cop any flack from anybody when you started doing burlesque?
No, my parents weren't thrilled about it. It was a secret. It was kind of a secret because, you know, that whole idea of being naked in public, you know, I guess they're more old-fashioned in that way. But, you know, if someone has something bad to say, I don't really care because what I'm doing is not hurting anyone. It's not wrong. And, you know, if you don't like it, don't watch it.
At the end of the day, it is a creative expression.
Exactly.
And we're all fucking naked under our clothes. We're born 24/7. People just need to get over this stuff.
Exactly. Oh, my God. But no, in answer to your question, like my parents are now supportive, but I guess the idea of it was a bit foreign.
Right. Which is understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it's, I've been, I think, I don't know, the world is becoming more open-minded a bit in that regard. So
oh,
I think
absolutely.
It's, no, I think it's all positive.
I think my mum would find it hard to wrap her head around me doing burlesque. She'd be a bit confronted by it.
When's your debut?
Well, you know, I'm always open to new things.
Okay. Well, I can't wait
I
for
might
that.
Have to go to the gym. Now not only are you a regular performer, but you're putting shows together yourself as well and producing them and all this sort of stuff, which you've been doing for quite some time in Montreal.
Yeah, I did that a little bit prior in Melbourne as well, but it was a different direction.
Right, yes. So also in what way in Melbourne? Was it more like singer-songwriter sort of stuff?
Yeah, singer-songwriter, but it was like music, art and poetry. It was called Venus Rising, and so there were a few of us.
I remember that.
So it was all like a female creative showcase celebration.
Yeah, wonderful. Do you incorporate your singing into your performances still?
Yes. Not always, but I am trying to, I guess I'm trying to capitalise on the whole stripping songstress thing, so I want to make that my thing.
Yeah.
So that's where I try and put it in as best I can.
I think that's a wonderful idea. I guess it's not unheard of for people to lip sync, but actually singing is not as common old thing. Not that I've seen anyway.
No, they are. Yeah. Like, they are out there. They are. Like, I'm not the first one by any means, but I definitely want to hone in on my skills and improve that art and kind of, you know, go from there.
Yeah. Take me back in the way back machine to when before you were ever creative. When did that first bug bite you.
Oh God, I don't think I was never creative. I always
never not creative.
Never, yeah. That. Oh, yep. Yeah, yes. That, or something like that. Yeah. No, I've always been creative. I've always enjoyed drawing. Like when I was a child, I did art and everything like that. I was a very good drawer. And then I was at school. I was always in like school choirs and stuff. So I guess I always had music, and my family was always musical, like playing music and everything. So that's always been instilled in me. So
I actually think we're all born creative.
We probably are, yeah.
And I think people who tell you that they're not, for one reason or another, they just had it smothered out of them
in their life.
And I think it's actually more a case of confidence, that they don't feel confident being creative.
Yeah, yeah.
But I am absolutely certain every living human being on this planet is actually creative in some shape or form.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things that people do that they might not think of being creative, but are.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
The moment you decide on the arrangement of whatever physical or audible thing, just for the sake of pleasure, then you're being creative, really.
No, that is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
Something to think about, isn't it?
So you first, when did you first start doing music?
I started doing music when, oh God, how long ago? So I actually was I had a bit of a fear of singing in public for a long time, actually.
Really?
Because I always got singing lessons and like was in school choirs, especially like in senior school and stuff, and my singing teachers would always try and encourage me to sing in public because they thought I was very good and everything, but I'd had a really big fear of singing solo in public. And so that didn't actually come to be until I think it was 2005, and it was part of a community project. So I sang like for solo, not solo, but sang by myself in public for the first time.
Wow.
There.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you just do a cappella or something?
Oh, no, it was so it was part of a, what was it called? It was called the Fire Cycle. It was kind of like a fundraiser for the local fire brigade.
Right.
Out in Dandenong Ranges. And so it was me and another girl. We were singing our individual parts, and then there was a choir backing us in the chorus. But so we did have to sing by ourselves at some point or another. So that was, the first time I sang by myself.
Right. I was in the school band when I was in primary school. I played clarinet.
Okay.
But I really just did it because my parents forced me to, but I wish I'd kept it.
Yeah, okay. With it.
Oh. They used to have to lock me in my room to practice, and I really only learnt how to play Love Me Tender.
Oh, that's enough.
right. And then whenever relatives would come around, they'd wheel me out, make me play Love Me Tender, and then I'd be like, can I go now?
Yeah, done. Bye.
But God, I wish I'd kept that up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I used to play piano and stuff as well, like a bit, but then I stopped.
Yeah.
And then, also I did, what was it, trombone, because part of school.
Trombone.
Trombone.
Wow.
Because it was like part of, it was kind of mandatory. It was either that or trumpet.
Right.
No, not the trombone. Yeah.
Wow, that's a very unwieldy instrument, isn't it?
Right.
It hurts someone, one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, bam.
And then you sort of did a bit of that stuff in the 2000s in Melbourne, is that correct?
Yes.
And then off to Montreal. It is a beautiful city, Montreal.
I have
fond memories of that city.
It is very much, it's very similar to Melbourne, I think.
Absolutely, I agree.
Cultured, creative. It's like Melbourne but with French.
Right, yes.
So it's very similar in that regard.
Yeah.
Even with the weather, like it's kind of, on sunny one moment and then, next half hour it's pouring rain and then sunny again. It's like,
Yeah.
And even their summers can be really warm.
Did you know French before you went there?
I did a little bit of French in high school, but I don't remember anything. I said, oui, non, voulez-vous que j'aille avec moi ce soir, you know?
Did you find you had to do lessons when you were living there, or did you just
I did a bit of lessons, like eventually I did some lessons. And then when I was working at the Wiggle Room, I kind of picked it up because you have to communicate with clients. I did it poorly, but I got there.
Right, yes, yeah. Well, that's the thing with languages. If you're making an effort, then you're halfway there.
Yeah, yeah.
You've just got to be, I'm crap at learning languages for some reason. I find it very, very difficult because I lived in Mexico for a little while and so I had to attempt some Spanish.
Yeah, yeah.
But I found that to learn a language, you've got to be prepared to make a fool of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, not be afraid of doing that.
Yeah,
you're
yeah,
just
yeah.
Gonna, you just got to do it. Yeah.
Well, that usually happens to me whether I like it or not.
Me too. Maybe I am born to learn languages.
Yeah.
And so you put on a few shows so do you have like a production name for what you
yes.
do?
Cabaret Abnormal.
Yes, I love that font.
Yes, that's it's on my shirt. Yeah, he's talking about my shirt, everyone.
Right, yes.
Yes, I have an Abnormal merch and everything, you know, branching out there. But no, yes, it's called Cabaret Abnormal.
Right.
Yes, awesome. And I started that in Montreal.
Yes.
Yes.
So you curate those shows. And you've got one coming up.
Oh, my God. It's funny you should talk about
right.
that. Yes, I have one coming up next Friday, November 29th at 24 Moons Bar. It's called Riot Circus. And so it's kind of blending weird sideshow with Riot Girls Revolution kind of thing. It's just, you know, coming up together and with a punk attitude. So that's kind of what the show
sounds
is.
Sounds amazing.
Yes, it is. Everyone, you should get your tickets before they're gone, you know.
Very appropriate venue too, because that's actually next strip club, 24
yeah,
Moons.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Tell me more about the show. Tell me about what people can expect to see in that.
A lot of oddity.
Love it.
Oddity, but mainly, I don't know, the whole company in general, Cabaret Abnormal, I started it, I guess, for people to be, I don't know, come as you are and just embrace your weirdness. And so the whole motto is kind of blending the weird with the wow.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What one thing that you know now about your craft that you wish you knew when you first started out, like 5 years ago?
Expressing yourself sexually, especially on stage, does not mean you're cheap or you're tacky. It's a form of expression, and that you shouldn't judge a person by the amount of clothes they have on or off stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is what I kind of wish I'd known now.
Yes.
But I think you evolve and you grow and you learn from your mistakes. So that's what I'm hoping to do and encourage others to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a fucking beautiful form of expression.
It is.
When a show has gone really well, you walk off stage thinking, oh, that was amazing. What is it about it that really charges you when it's at its peak?
I think it's a connection with the audience. I think, you know, they get it. There's something in your audience, your performance that resonates with the audience, and they carry that energy, and it's a good energy exchange, and you know you've done your job. So I think that's what it is.
Because I guess in a way burlesque is very dependent on audience participation.
Absolutely.
Because if they're a bit dead, then it's hard
It is.
Right? Yeah.
It's hard, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when you're, I don't know, you're kind of being vulnerable in removing pieces of clothing, and it's kind of like, oh, you know, a bit awkward if they're not on the same side as you.
Right, yeah. North American audiences, are they're pretty enthusiastic.
Yeah, Montreal is a very open-minded liberal city. So yes. I think, it may not be the ballpark for everything else, for every other city, because there are some very narrow-minded people out there still.
Sure,
yeah,
of course.
They equate burlesque with, like, exploitation.
Yeah, our current government is full of them.
Oh, my God. And American government too, my God.
Yay, joys of the world, but, you know.
Yeah.
There's joy ahead. Trump will go to prison.
Yes, be gone.
And something horrible
be
will
gone.
Happen to Scott Morrison.
Yeah.
We hope. Did you perform outside of Montreal?
Yeah, I did in Ottawa. It may not be, you know, too far from Montreal, but it's outside of Montreal.
It
but
is.
Yeah, a couple of times in Ottawa, I did their burlesque festival there, and also
was that at the I did a show there. I think it was at the Performing Arts Centre or something. I can't quite
something
remember
something like
name that. Of it. Yeah,
something
yeah.
like that. I'll yeah. just say yes,
yeah.
yes,
yeah,
yeah. But also, yeah, I did a burlesque festival there, and also they have one of the producers called Rhapsody Blue. She has a frequent Wednesday night weekly show, so yeah. I performed at one of the Wednesday night shows.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm going to jump to Wheelin' and Stealin'. This is the part of the show where I read a piece of work by somebody else. Hence, I'm wheeling and stealing it. And today, I want to stay on brand and on point. So I'm going to do a poem that is actually ties back into a previous show with Abdul Hamoud. He is the editor and founder of a thing called a Dirty 30 Challenge, where every day for a month people write to a theme. And then he's published a couple of books on this. This is from Anthology Volume 2, and this is a poem by Bridget Morgan, who I happen to know is also a wonderful dancer. In fact, recently on the Instagram, she was doing this sort of some sort of Instagram challenge where she was posting a different dance every day, which was a joy to watch, a joy. So the prompt for – so much like this show, they work to prompts. And the prompt for this poem by Bridget was, your poem must end with the words, there you have it. The theme, if it isn't obvious already, is ending, given we're at the end of this challenge. This was on day 30. There you go. Okay, so Bridget Morgan. For as profound as it might be, I am wanting weary. This fireside traveller ready for rest, reflection, having passed the test. I have nothing left to offer. This goodbye, though, is only temporary, for time will truly fly till we meet again. Twist these sheets of poetic bliss, and until then you shall be missed, and quite simply, be it so. We let the words go. We say goodnight. We set our lives right again. It's over now. All done. This is it. And there. Well, there you have it. And there you have it. Thank you, Bridget Morgan. Thank you to the Dirty 30 Anthology Volume 2, which you can pick up in bookshops and on the interwebs. Speaking of interwebs, does Abnormal have an internet presence?
It does.
Abnormal Cabaret?
It does. It's www.cabaretabnormal.com.
I do believe you've even got some sweet merch, too.
I do. They'll be on sale next Friday night, everybody. I have a tank top, which you all can't see, obviously, but it's
they'll see it.
They'll see it eventually. Yeah. But no, tank tops with Abnormal, so that's kind of the thing, Abnormal.
Yeah.
Tank tops and T-shirts, underwear even.
Really?
Underwear.
You've got Abnormal undies.
Yes.
Branded. Very. Amazing.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
I'm Abnormal. also,
fly your freak flag proudly.
Yes. Wear no pants. and also Abnormal, enamel pins?
Enamel
pins. They're actually amazing. They're quite popular because they're stylish and they look really good.
They look awesome.
Yeah,
I've seen those on the interwebs.
Oh, thank you. And also prints. I had a couple of very good friends of mine in the burlesque world in Montreal do a photo shoot with me for some really good prints that are actually really popular as well. So they're in...
Wonderful.
Yeah, they're postcard and also A4.
Amazing.
So,
love it.
No, they're really, really good, everyone. Like, you should see them for yourself and buy it.
Incredible.
Buy it.
And the show's on Friday.
The 29th. So not this Friday, next Friday.
Right. Yes, this show will be out by then. at 24 Moons. How many performers do you have on the bill?
Jeez, you have to think, my God. No, it's not that many, actually, but a few of us will be doing a couple of performances, like myself included. I think there are about, seven or eight people, including myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there'll be a link to the show in our show notes so people can... Tap away on that and find out for sure.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to read you a brand new work of mine that, I'll read you one of the creative prompts that it kind of speaks to at the end. But this is called I Am a DJ. It starts off with some lines from a new order song. Oh, you've got green eyes. Oh, you've got blue eyes. Oh, you've got grey eyes. I am a DJ. I am what I play. Like many things in my life, it was nothing I ever planned on becoming. I did it for kicks long enough until eventually it was something I felt comfortable calling myself. Although, like a lot of creatives, I often feel like I will be found out for being a fraud eventually. Technically, I don't really have many skills. I can't mix my way out of a paper bag. But I've always thought it's not how you play, it's what you play that counts. People think I'm a social animal because I'm a DJ, but actually it's the exact opposite. Picture house parties in the 90s. Picture a guy who gets awkward in group situations, even around his best friends. And he has many friends, the most amazing friends he could hope for. A guy who just wants something to do at parties. Who drowns under the weight of small talk. A guy who just likes to be of use. He gravitates towards the stereo. He takes control. He watches the party lift and sway and undulate. He doesn't have to talk to anybody. And yet, he communicates to a crowd of people at the same time. These were conversations I could get used to, and I did. The role of DJ is perfectly suited to the introvert slash extrovert. You shape the happiness of a room, and you do it all alone. Here I am now, DJing in a Fitzroy bar. The crowd is young, students mostly in the early 20s. I play week after week. I know what they like. I know how to push their collective buttons. The view from the DJ booth is godlike. You are visible and invisible at the same time. I see couples get together and break up all in the space of one song. I see loners swaying on the perimeter of the dance floor, aching to get noticed by someone, anyone, please notice me. I see the moment just before a fight is about to begin, and just as the first punch is swung, I completely kill the music and everything stops dead. Music is time, and when it stops, so does everything else. I see lost loves from the past and the shadows on the dance floor, the same mannerisms, the silhouette, the way they move, and the smile and the shake of your head. Is that you? Could that be you? And then they turn towards the light and the past fades to grey. At the bar where I play every week, directly below the DJ booth is a basement room where the beer kegs are kept. Sometimes when I need a break and it's all a bit much, I put on a long song and I descend into the cool, quiet room. Often it's during Bohemian Rhapsody, a classic. It never fails to unify the dance floor, and I'm so fucking over it. I've just heard that song way too many times. I descend the stairs and I sit on a steel barrel. Right above my head, the chaos of the dance floor rumbles like a thunderstorm. I can still hear the music, but it's muted and distant. In a corner of the basement room, I see a movement in the shadows. And there it is, my earliest memory. A faceless man in a full black body stocking wearing a glittery black bowler hat, swaying slightly to and fro. Hands palms out, uncertain if to give or receive. I remember it as a nightmare, but only because of the fear of not knowing what it meant. Behind the black stocking-covered face, I can see the lips moving ever so slightly as if he's trying to tell me something, and he has been trying to tell me something all of my life. Upstairs, I can hear Freddie Mercury drawing the song to a close. Nothing really matters to me. I must return to the surface to cue the next track, but when I climb up the ladder, I'm not in the bar anymore. I ascend into my family living room. My late father is standing by the stereo with his back to me. I see him take a record and place it on the turntable. I see him ever so gently place a needle onto the wax. It's Frank Sinatra, Fly Me to the Moon. My father turns to me. His face is clean and pure, and his smile is as bright as a disco ball the size of the sun. So that was a brand new poem of mine called I Am a DJ, and it was partly influenced by a couple of prompts from our listeners, one from the wonderful Liz Jelly, who's been sending us so many amazing prompts. One of hers was, I'm paraphrasing here, something about how do good people always die young, which is reference to my father who died in his early 60s. And also another prompt by Benny Solar from Melbourne Spoken Word. One of his prompts is, what's inside my cowboy hat? Well, that's one of the things that's inside my cowboy hat, which I wear pretty much every time I DJ now. It's sort of become my thing. Well, I'm not wearing my cowboy hat today, but that's one of the things inside.
Disappointing. I wanted to see your cowboy hat in person.
Well, I'll have to wear it to your show next Friday.
You'd better.
Which is at 24 Moons.
24 Moons.
You can get tickets on the interwebs. I'll drop a link to that in the show notes. What time does it start?
It starts at around 8. Doors open at 7, so but around 8 o'clock it will
Amazing.
Start.
Amazing. I can't wait. Abnormal Cabaret. Featuring Mickey, Michelle, our guest today, and many other very talented human beings, I imagine.
We hope so.
Yes,
yes,
so.
Of course. No, they're all wonderful.
Of course,
thank
they
you.
Are. And this, unbelievably, our season, our second season, it doesn't seem that long ago that I came in here for the very first time. It really doesn't. But incredibly, I think next week will probably be our last show of the season. So we're drawing to a close with season two.
Oh, wow.
And looking forward to bigger and better things for next year for season three, if the world doesn't end.
Yeah.
I want to thank my producer, Derek Myers, without whom I would not be here, and wonderful Castaway Studios. I want to thank my general supporter, Lux Country. I want to thank you, Mickey, Michelle, for coming into the studio today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me and having me my podcast debut.
Yay.
Amazing.
And our first stripping songstress.
Yes, you got
there.
On
the podcast.
You got there. Yay.
And, yeah, make sure you check out Cabaret Abnormal.
Yes.
You've been listening to More Than a Whelan. Thank you to my listeners, because I wouldn't be here without you either. Whelan out.
That awesome podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.